Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Let's do a quick preview of the docket. Well, the prosecution has filed another motion in the Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell case. Why? Continuance is the word of the day. Next, the court set a hearing for that motion on May 19th, so the court wants to get it resolved rather quickly. Who does the delay in the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial help or hurt? Another love story, that's right, the Whites. A convict and a cop, some new updates. I told you in the Murdoch case, Alec Murdoch could not do it alone. Another co-conspirator has been indicted and arrested. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. We have a lot to talk about, so before we can do the docket, let's take a moment to support our sponsors. Today it's CrimeTalkSearch.com.
Please, go to CrimeTalkSearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did.
Check out crimetalksearch.com. We use it in our law practice daily, and you never know what you are going to find. All right, please like the video, subscribe if you have not, hit that bell for notifications, and if you can't watch us on YouTube, you can listen to us on your favorite podcasting app anytime. Simply type in Crime Talk with Scott Reich. All right, as you may recall, we left the country last week. We're south of the border. The lovely Miss Kristen and I remain south of the border in an undisclosed location, enjoying the sun. In fact, just on the other side of this camera, the lovely Miss Kristen is reading a book in the pool in our suite. That's right. It's a beautiful location. All right. Let's get to the docket. Let's open the record for Monday, May 9th, 2022. Let's get going. First, the prosecution has filed another motion for, guess what? A continuance in the Lori Vallow matter. Now, why do they want a continuance? Okay, I've said it. The prosecution, by this time, that has literally been working on this case, presumably pretty much nonstop, for the last two and a half years, should say, Judge, you tell us where, you tell us when, we'll have our witnesses, we'll have our evidence, and we will prove our case beyond a reasonable doubt. For some reason, the prosecution is absolutely, well, it comes across as terrified to just go try their case. Listen, sometimes prosecutors have to try the same case twice. And if that's what happens, well, you just got to do it sometimes. What the prosecution is saying is, hey, the charges against Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell were charged in one indictment. And since there was this competency evaluation, it kind of held things up. And Chad Daybell has waived speedy trial. His trial will begin in January of 2023. But when Lori Vallow appeared several weeks ago for her arraignment, she said not guilty, and she clearly stated she was not going to waive her right to a speedy trial. Does that mean? It means the state of Idaho has a legal obligation to get her to trial within 6 months from her saying not guilty. If the state doesn't do that, the case will be dismissed. Now, I can tell you, speedy trial is not usually a great reason to get a case dismissed. The state will oblige you, apparently, except when it comes to the DAs for Lori Vallow. I don't know what they're trying to do. So the prosecution has filed a motion in this case called Motion to Find Good Cause and Continue Trial and Prevent an Improper Severance. basically what the prosecution is saying is that we really wanted to try these cases together. That's why we indicted them together. It's the same witnesses. It's the same evidence. Don't make us do this twice, Judge. And oh, by the way, and we already told you the cost is close to $300,000. It's going to really be another $300,000, although the court didn't hear that argument. Really what they're saying is that according to their own motion, it says the right to a speedy trial is guaranteed in the Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution, Article 1, Section 13 of the Idaho Constitution. That pesky Constitution, right? Those plain meaning of the words, they have meaning and effect. The court has to give them meaning and effect. So the question is, how can the state get beyond the 6 months of speedy trial? Well, they're stating that the court has some authority under some previous cases decided there in Idaho where they said that there is a test and you have to show good cause. And one of the things that the court has to look at if they're going to deprive somebody of their speedy trial rights is, first, the length of the delay, the reason for the delay, whether the defendant asserted the right to a speedy trial, and any prejudice to the defendant. Now, obviously, anything outside of speedy trial could be prejudicial, right? The law says what it says. 6 months is 6 months. But like they teach in law school, there's an exception to every rule. And in this particular case, some case law says, well, if it's a minor delay or the witness has a short delay in being unavailable, then we can do that. And don't get me wrong, most courts have these exceptions written into the law because, well, the legislature always tries to help the prosecution. And in this particular case, the prosecution saying, hey, it's really a short delay, but actually we're talking a trial scheduled in October through December. That's 4 months is a long time, presumably if you're sitting in custody. And the district attorney is also saying, hey, we wouldn't have had these delay issues. However, you know, there was a long pretrial delay and it was caused by Lori Vallow because, you know, she went off to the state hospital. But guess what? I think that argument fails because, well, you can't prosecute somebody if they're not competent to proceed. And then they try to say that defendant Vallow Daybell has asserted her speedy trial rights, which she has. And the Supreme Court in Idaho has come up with an exception in some cases where you shouldn't necessarily worry about that, but where the defendant has not willingly agreed to waive speedy trial rights, well, you gotta give them their trial. Now they say, well, there's prejudice to Miss Lori Vallow. The prosecution says, well, the prejudice is to be assessed in the light, in the interest of the right to speedy trial, designed to prevent oppressive pretrial incarceration, to minimize anxiety and concern of the accused, and to limit the possibility the defense will be impaired. And the prosecution says that really, what's the harm? She's already been in custody. She's not going anywhere. Let's just delay the trial. Now, the court has set a hearing on this in a couple of weeks. We'll see what happens. I hope the court says, guess what? These are the facts that we have been delivered. We have to interpret the facts with the law that's given, which is that she has a right to a speedy trial. Yes, I understand, prosecution, you're not happy that there's basically been a backdoor severance of these two trials, which the court's already ruled wasn't going to take place, but they got it anyway. Guess what? Those are the kinds of things, the legal maneuvering that takes place in court proceeding, and sometimes it works out for the prosecution, and sometimes it works out for the defense. I hope the judge says, nope, we'll see you here in October. Get your case ready to go. All right, next on the docket, who has the advantage with the 1 week scheduled delay in the trial for Johnny Depp and Amber Heard? Well, as we've talked about, Johnny Depp's defamation trial is on a scheduled week-long break after the world listened to a parade of witnesses, including Amber Heard, testifying in recent days last week. Now, Depp is trying to prove to a jury that the actress defamed him in the op-ed she penned for the Washington Post that alleged that she was the victim of domestic and emotional abuse without specifically naming Johnny Depp. Now, Depp's case is no layup for his legal team, all right? And Depp has an uphill battle, in my humble opinion, to win this case and asking get the $50 million. And why does he have an uphill battle? First of all, anything that was said in the op-ed in Hurt's testimony is completely false. That's what they have to prove. Everything that she said is completely false, made up with malice. Because remember, he's a public figure, and truth is an absolute defense to a defamation case. Remember, the op-ed does not state a specific instant or a place or a time that any of this happened. It just generally references being a victim of abuse on the part of Ms. Hurt. The attorneys for Johnny Depp are going to try to poke a hole in the testimony of Amber Hurt on cross-examination. And this one-week break is great for them. Certainly, they are getting transcripts if they haven't already received those, or videos of what's taking place in court. And then they can go back in and prepare and literally probably excoriate Ms. Hurt. But Ms. Hurd's team also gets the advantage as well, because they get the opportunity to go see how things are being read in the court of public opinion, go back in and try to clean things up that maybe aren't going so great, ask those questions that the court of public opinion is asking, so that they have this time and can clean that up either on continuing direct or on redirect as well. It really helps both parties. But remember, Johnny Depp has to be able to show that never, never in his life has he ever done anything that could be constituted as domestic abuse under the law. In previous videos, we've given you that law. It's pretty general. It's really something done to an intimate partner with the intent to harass, annoy, alarm, intimidate, exert some power over. We'll see what the jury decides to do. Next on the docket, another love story. And just when you think you've seen the most powerful love story of all, Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, look at the Whites. That's right, confessed murderer Casey White, who broke out of the Lauderdale County Detention Center in Alabama on April 29th, aided by his 57-year-old prison guard, Vicky White. Now, the pair, who are unrelated but are apparently lovers, are still on the run from authorities now 10 days after they were supposed to arrive at an Alabama courthouse for a mental health evaluation. A woman living in Tennessee discovered that Casey and Vicky White's getaway car had been abandoned outside of her home. And this witness stated that it's a little eerie that they were, in fact, here. Jackie Adams came across the suspicious vehicle the evening of April 29th, roughly 100 miles from the jail the pair had fled earlier that day. Now, Adams, who drives a school bus in the rural town, said she was coming home from one of her other jobs when she saw the then-identified SUV, tinted windows, and no tags, which belonged to the former corrections officer. Well, she called the sheriff's office to have it towed because she knows all the cars in the neighborhood and knew it wasn't anybody's car there. Well, the car still contained White's jail radio, handcuffs, and keys. And it was ultimately towed to the sheriff's department, unaware that this was involved in connection with the manhunt for the Whites. The car sat in a Tennessee tow lot for an entire week until Friday the cops realized that the impounded vehicle belonged to Vicky White, spurring obviously the United States Marshals and SWAT members to circle back to Adams' property Friday morning, a week after she had actually reported the vehicle missing. Now, investigators also learned that White had sold her home in the week before the escape and had withdrawn about $90,000 in cash from several bank accounts in the area. The police also noted that Vicky White had used an alias to purchase the SUV and was likely to try and do it again. My guess is she may have had another vehicle already stashed there. Well, the United States Marshal Service, specializing in fugitive manhunts, also said a report Friday that Vicky White might have darkened her hair. The marshals released a composite image of what she might look like, as well as the photos of Casey White's tattoos, including one with White prison. Now, the report also notes that the Starks have a little bit of a difference. Casey White is 38, and he stands about a full foot taller than the former corrections officer, who is 57. Now, the reward has been up to $25,000 for any information leading to the arrest of both parties. Now, in other Casey White news, Casey White's previous attorney said, well, you know, when he's on his meds, He's actually a pretty nice guy, but he probably wants to die by suicide by cop, which is what his intentions were in his previous case that got him that 75-year sentence. I guess the question will be, will he get his wish? Now, next on the docket, Alex Murdoch. Remember when I said there's no way he could have done this alone? Well, more and more people are getting arrested and being held in custody. The judge handling the matter, Judge Allison Lee, who presided over the state grand jury, set bond Friday morning at $1 million, including house arrest, for the second alleged co-conspirator to be indicted in the Alex Murdoch financial scheme. And the second co-conspirator is the former CEO of Palmetto State Bank, Russell Lafitte. Now, he was indicted on April 14th on 21 counts of conspiring with Murdoch to steal nearly $2 million from Murdoch's clients. Now, per the conditions of his bond, he'll be required to surrender his passport, and he'll be electronically monitored while under house arrest. He is barred from conducting bank business and even having conversations about banking matters with his family. Now, the attorneys tried to argue that he is not a danger to the community or a flight risk, but the prosecutors noted he just put his home up for sale, and he's not a danger to anyone except maybe to some turkeys. Apparently, Mr. Lafitte likes to hunt, and that's the only people in danger. Well, normally when you're on bond, you can't possess firearms. You'd think his attorney would know that. I can't believe he actually made that argument. Well, the attorneys for Mr. Lafitte also argued that he had cooperated with the authorities in this particular case, but the Attorney General office said, yeah, no, that Mr. Lafitte was in fact an important cog in the alleged plan that he and Mr. Murdoch engaged in to steal money. And they also noted that giving a statement is not actually cooperating, like in producing documents because you're coming on to Team South Carolina Attorney General's office. Yeah, apparently that didn't take pay. So there are now three indictments against Lafitte as well as Murdoch, and also suspended Buford attorney Corey Fleming. They were all unsealed last week. Now, the first superseding indictment charged Lafitte and Fleming with one count of criminal conspiracy for allegedly working with Alec Murdoch to steal $350,000 from a Natarsha Thomas and the trust. Murdoch is accused of convincing Pamela Pinckney that she needed to hire Fleming, who is Murdoch's best friend and godfather to his son Buster, when they sued a tire company for the 2009 car accident that left Hakeem paralyzed from the neck down. The same Murdoch-Fleming pairing has been employed multiple times over the years, including the Satterfield case and after the 2019 boat crash involving Murdoch's son Paul. The second superseding indictment accuses Murdoch and Lafitte of stealing $309,581 from the estate of Hakeem Pinckney on December 21st, 2011, just months after Hakeem died and days before the Pinckney's first Christmas without Hakeem. The money was allegedly stolen to pay back loans the two had taken from another client of Murdoch, for whom Lafitte served as conservator. And Murdoch and Fleming are all charged with a criminal conspiracy for allegedly conspiring to surreptitiously misappropriate to Murdoch $89,133.44 in trust Fleming held as attorney for Pamela Pinckney, according to the Attorney General's office. The second superseding indictment also accuses Fleming of using $8,000 from Pamela Pinckney's trust to take himself, Murdoch, and another attorney on a private jet for the 2012 College World Series in Omaha, Nebraska. And the third superseding indictment charges Murdoch and Lafitte of conspiring to steal $1,325,000 in funds controlled by Lafitte at the Palmetto State Bank in Allendale County on behalf of Arthur Badger, whose wife was killed in 2011 in a car crash. The funds were stolen, allegedly, to allow Murdoch to pay back loans Lafitte had issued to him from his client's funds in an unrelated case in which Lafitte served as a fiduciary. Wow, I wonder if all these college buddies were thinking, this is, just helping their old buddy out. This is what they got. And the final indictment charges Lafitte as an aider and abettor to Murdoch in 12 breaches of trust accounts in the Allendale case. It's also alleged that Mr. Lafitte intentionally enabled Murdoch to conduct transactions to further Murdoch's scheme that should never have been conducted. Now, you got all this white-collar stuff, but then you have the impending, hopefully, arrest, investigation, presumption of innocence to Alec Murdoch regarding the death of his wife and son, where he has been accused as the only person of interest in the case. I think things are only going to get worse for Alex Murdoch if you think they couldn't get even worse for him. And like I've said before, ladies and gentlemen, it's an undeniable truth, particularly when it comes to criminal defense. The threat of imminent incarceration tends to break the bonds of loyalty. Who is going to roll first? Who is going to step up and cooperate? Remember, in a multi-codefendant case, the first one in gets the best deal and sets the bar for everybody else on what these sentences will be. All right, next on the docket, our dumb criminal of the day. And this is the first one. I don't think I've ever seen a case where they've argued about this. I've heard about money. I've heard about intimate relationships, jealousy. But wait till you hear this. A 28-year-old Florida man was arrested yesterday for allegedly battering his ex-boyfriend during a confrontation about penises. That's right. Cops report that Kyle Elias Perez, who shares a St. Petersburg residence with the 37-year-old victim, woke his ex up at about 5:15 a.m. and confronted the victim for not having any compassion for Perez's desire for an uncircumcised penis. Investigators noted that Perez, who apparently is circumcised, screamed at the victim for having no compassion for the arrested mutilated genitals. Perez, cops said, then grabbed the victim's arm and struck the man in the face, causing visible injuries to the arm and the face. Perez also allegedly scratched the victim while pulling his hair. When officers arrived on the scene, Perez fled the residence on foot and hid behind a vehicle in a rear alley, obviously hoping that they would never see him. Perez reportedly stated that the victim's account of the incident was correct and that he and his ex-boyfriend victim were arguing over uncircumcised penises. What can you say, ladies and gentlemen? You can't make this stuff up. All right, thanks for watching. Let's go ahead and close the record for Monday, May 9th, 2022. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you tomorrow on Crime Talk.